What's up and welcome to Shop Sounds, a woodworking podcast about nothing. With myself, Nick Key of Key Woodworks, Jason Hibbs of Bourbon Moth, and Keith Johnson, better known as KJ Sawdust. All three of us are on YouTube, Instagram, and TikTok.
All right, well, feel free to speak up, anyone.
What, we're doing this now?
I guess that's what's written down in my schedule. Because I had to reschedule.
Yeah, you did have to reschedule. Although I will say, I don't think we let too many people down. I only got one DM that said we were late. They were making sure we didn't quit.
Oh. Yeah, that's yet to be seen. But I think we're in the clear for a little while.
A little while.
We have big plans ahead. Stick around.
We made it this far.
Yeah.
This is episode 13. On a Friday night.
Yeah, what the heck? I actually prefer this rather than Thursday night, but, you know.
Oh, maybe we could reschedule every week. Jason, are you here?
Yeah.
I think his screen is frozen.
No, I'm here. I was waiting. I told myself I was going to wait the 1 minute after I hit
before
the
you say anything.
Talk. Because I always just jump in, I start talking. I feel like I don't give you the chance to truly express yourselves, and I wanted to be, you know, kind and considerate. So,
oh, man.
I made it. Well, I made it 1 minute.
From the bottom of my heart, thank you for that 1 minute of fame.
Yeah.
Yeah, I feel like I've been heard.
But now I got to back up because I have so many things to say. Maybe you want to record on Friday night, Keith, because you don't have a social life. Boom. Roasted.
Boom.
Hashtag burn. Cancel.
I don't mind. I don't care.
That is true. No, just for me, because like when my wife, like a Thursday nights when I crawl into bed at friggin' whenever, 11:30 and wake her up. But on Friday night, it's not
as
big of a deal.
Yeah, that makes sense. Yeah, I literally don't know what day it is anymore. So
yeah, I don't really either.
It really
so
doesn't
matter.
Affect weekends,
me.
I mean, when you work for yourself from home and you work on the weekends a lot, it doesn't matter.
They all blend together. Right. 7 days a week. Doesn't matter. They're all Monday or all Friday or all Wednesday.
Yeah. Every day ends in Y.
Hey, yeah. How is your how's your schooling going, Keith? I've been seeing some videos. Are you taking your like tripod and stuff into class and taping stuff?
Yeah, I have.
Are people looking at you like, what the heck's this guy doing?
Nope, they haven't actually. Yeah, I recorded two videos. Like the first one was kind of the just like a single dovetail, my first dovetail that I cut, and then I recorded one and edited one for a double through Dovetail. I was going to post it tomorrow morning. I posted it on TikTok already, but yeah, I mean, I don't know. It gets really no traction on Instagram or just kind of pointless.
Are you making sure to cut your tails first?
We cut our pins first, or we have been.
Ooh.
I'm giving you a hard time. Well, yeah, I'm just glad I remembered.
Yeah.
Half blind, we do the tails first, and showed us a cool way to do them on the table saw by getting your table saw blade ground to 10 degrees, so you don't even have to cut those by hand.
Wait, you grind it?
Yeah, you take that table saw blade, your blade, and you grind the teeth at 10 degrees, so when you tilt your table saw at 10 degrees, it's perfectly flat at the top to give you a flat bottom. Yeah, so I'm having one of my blades done. It's like $20 to have it done. I had an old rip blade. So
can't you just turn the blade to 10 degrees, turn the table saw on, and hold a file above it?
That, well, yeah, just turn the safety switch off on the saw stop because that will probably set it off.
Yeah.
Because it's metal.
Just hold a file to it and you'll get 10 degrees, you know?
Yeah, or one of those Gator zip sanders. Just use a real coarse
just hold
grit.
The sander to the
to make sure you use an 80 grit.
Yeah. It's got that base gives a little bit so it won't be as harsh when the teeth hit it.
Yeah,
it bites.
I have realized in doing more YouTube videos how much doing content changes the way that I would normally do things, cuz I used to cut a lot of weird angles and stuff freehand on the table saw because it was quick and easy rather than cutting it by hand.
Yeah.
But then you start doing content and you can't put that stuff on YouTube because everybody and their brother is going to yell at you for it.
Yeah.
Yep.
And So it's just unfair. I mean, it might save me fingers in the long run, but...
Well, that's why you just say you did it off camera.
Oh, yeah. I forgot. Forgot about that.
Go back to that old chestnut.
That's my go-to.
Yeah. I want everyone to just close their eyes for a second and picture in your mind's eye what I can see right now on Nick's screen. He is wearing a black t-shirt in a black room, no hat, and his face and head are just like a glowing ball in the middle of the screen. It looks like he's just this unembodied head.
He does look like the floating head, like the magician on Pee-wee's Playhouse. Remember he would open that yeah. the doors up and that, I forget what his name was. We go, Mecca Lecca High, Mecca Heiny Ho.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah,
ringing a bell.
I was thinking you were going to go the Adams Family route.
Oh, okay.
Uncle Lester.
Fester.
Fester.
Uncle Fester. Yeah. You mean Aunt
Uncle
Esther.
Lester.
Did you go as Mr. Clean for Halloween?
I did.
Yeah.
Big hoop earring and all.
Perfect. You'd make a good Mr. Clean. You should do that next year.
That'd be pretty funny.
Yeah, but you need white pants and a white shirt, so... That black
outfit of
yours. Just go to
Sherwin-Williams. They sell those white Dickies there.
That's right.
A tie.
Why do painters wear white? What is the point of that?
I've always wondered.
I think
it doesn't
it's
make
because
sense.
Because they use a lot of white paint and it covers up the fact that they missed or that they spilled all over themselves.
Oh,
but
I thought maybe it was
covered in
because
colors.
They could see if they spilled on themselves like really easy. Like, oh, there's a drip.
What would you do about it?
I don't know. But it is funny how white's like this painting thing. Why? I don't know.
It's like a badge of honor when you get your passport stamped at every country you go to. If you got your white overalls with every color of Benjamin Moore and Sherwin Williams that you've ever used and you can name them all. Oh, that's PC-165 green.
I bet after they wear those a lot, they could take them off and they'd just stand straight up.
Absolutely. Oh. Yeah, they have to be lowered into them with a transmission hoist.
Yeah. The first time they bend down, it's just like breaks.
They got to squirt them with water just to loosen them up.
Yeah.
This episode brought to you by Sherwin-Williams. Cover the earth.
Paint. Cover the earth.
Cover the earth.
Right.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, I love it. So Keith, back to your cutting pins first.
Yeah.
Why you never explained why he does that. Like, what's the point of doing that first?
I don't know. But what I can tell you is, because we cut the whole joint with just a saw and a chisel. Like, there's no coping saw to clean out that bottom. Like, when you're doing your tails, normally you cut the sides with a handsaw, and then you take a coping saw and get in down towards the bottom to clean that whole thing out, and then pare away at the whatever that is, the shoulder.
Yeah.
So everything is just done with a chisel and a handsaw. And
in
then,
high school, we didn't even cut the joints. We would just roll up the tip really tight. And then you're good to go.
And then light it.
Wrong class.
Oh, sorry.
Yeah,
that's the extent of joints that I knew about in high school. I wasn't a woodworker.
That was recess.
Yeah.
I think, to be honest, it's like he's showing you both ways. Like, cause for some joints, like, you're going to need this way, and for others, you're going to use the other way. So it's just kind of
opening
you up to...
Are you enjoying it? I mean, are you having fun?
Yeah. Yeah. It is learning a lot. This guy, the teacher, Bob Van Dyke there, I mean, he's been teaching woodworking for probably 20 years or something. He opened this school, or even longer.
Wait, is this Richard's brother?
Richard Van... Bob's... No, it's...
Dick?
No, it's Bob. Dick.
Dick.
Yeah,
Van
right.
Dyke?
Dick Van Dyke. Yes. Yes, it's his little brother.
Okay. Gotcha.
So, you know, just a ton of little tips and tricks on sharpening and setting up a plane iron and spring joints and table saw jigs and just a lot of stuff that you'd never really think of. You know, and a lot of stuff is just refresher things. You know, proper way to, you know, Jason, you were just talking about safety on the table saw. You know, proper way to actually feed each board through and where to put pressure and where your hands go. You know, stuff we were never taught. We just did it our way.
You learn the hard way when the board flies out of your hand and hits you in the stomach. Yeah.
And the kickback. Yeah. So it's so far we're starting on our, you know, not project, which is a side table. So it's going to be like there's we each get two cherry legs, two walnut legs. The aprons are poplar. The top, I think, is going to be cherry, and the drawer is poplar and cherry. So it's all over the place. And it's more of that way you get to experiment with different types of wood. You know, you can try poplar and see how that you can machine it and work it versus how hard cherry is and walnut. So it gives you a baseline of what you don't want to work with.
I have never in my life made a single thing out of cherry. I've never even cut a board of cherries.
Yeah,
never
used it. Cherry's nice. It's really nice.
It's cherry.
Oh. Right, pardon. It's
I get it.
So choice. So cherry.
I heard it's the pits. Get it? Because cherry pits.
Oh,
I get it.
Yeah.
I like maraschinos.
Hmm.
Did you know, fun fact about maraschino cherries, I used to live in the Columbia Gorge in Washington, on the Washington side of the Columbia River, and there's a ton of cherry orchards over there. And my house is like basically surrounded by cherry orchards, and the cherry orchards that surrounded my house were was a company that sold their cherries to be made into maraschino cherries. And they pick them when they're green. They're not even ripe.
Huh.
And then they dye them red to get them that red color. Yeah.
Right.
So you're not even eating ripe cherries.
Because ripe cherries are like dark red.
Yeah. And so in order for them to get that bright red, they pick them green and then they dye them. So.
Wow. It sounds healthy.
Yeah.
It's all a lie. Yeah.
Red dye. Isn't that the same stuff that was outlawed on red M&Ms?
Probably.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
That's the good stuff. The good stuff.
Wow.
Hey, back to hardness and stuff like that of wood. I saw... What?
Sorry, I thought that was going to go in a different direction.
Well with the hardness of wood,
it already is
in a direction. Straight up.
Straight up. I saw a video you posted of you chiseling pine.
Yeah.
And my mind was blown. I've never seen pine get cut that fine.
Well, then that's like how you know you're sharp. Like that's after you sharpen, you don't shave your hair or cut a piece of paper. You pare end grain pine. It's pretty satisfying.
It looks satisfying.
Yeah. So once you know you can, we actually, we took a piece of pine and took like an inch off the end by using a chisel only.
Yeah.
And a hammer, obviously. But, you know, it's obviously not the most efficient way to make a board shorter, but it was pretty neat. You know, you come from each side with the chisel, just kind of pairing up to your score line, and then finally it breaks off, and then you have to pare the whole thing completely smooth and flat and square. So it's a...
How do you get your chisel that sharp? Like, I've only started doing, you know, sharpening with my chisels. Mm-hmm. I used to use that electric like work sharp.
Oh yeah, I just sold mine. Yeah, the work sharp 3000.
Those things are garbage.
It was okay when I first started it because I just needed an edge. But now that I know that that's nowhere near what you should be doing to your tools, I started getting some diamond stones and that trying to sharpen it that way. But I'm nowhere near.
Do you have a honing guide, or are you doing it by hand?
No, I've got a honing guide. I've got the, it's a Veritas honing guide.
Oh, yeah.
Mm.
So it's a great, honing guide, but maybe I'm just not, I think what my biggest problem is I'm not patient enough to really.
It doesn't take long. I feel like sometimes people over sharpen and that almost like hurts you.
Well, you need it flat first, right?
Yeah. The back's got to be left flat.
Yeah, I think I skipped that first. Like, I don't get my back flat enough to give me a good first primary bevel.
Mm. Yeah, I mean, once you set that primary, that's really the only time you ever need to, unless you have a chip in or something, you have to grind it back to reset that. But once you first set that, you never have to again. I had the Veritas, and I literally, I just bought a new one to replace my old one because my old one was old. And before I even used it, when I started taking this class, he's like,
get the Lee Nielsen. Now, the Lee Nielsen is the one that's like the pinches together. Like you can buy a cheap one on Amazon.
I have the Veritas and the Lee Nielsen one, and I never use the Veritas one. The Lee Nielsen one's money.
I can tell you he is right. The Lee Nielsen makes... The problem with the Veritas is it is a bit clunky trying to get the blade set in there, and then you have the two knobs on each side. You loosen, I mean, tighten. Right, you have to go down evenly. But the problem is, you know, Nick, there's no... like real shear force on there. As soon as you just bump the tip of your chisel, it's like skews. It's loose.
Yeah.
With the Lee Nielsen, it is in there rock solid, and it's more money. I think it's $125 versus what, 80 or 60? I forget what the Veritas one. I mean, listen, I got by with the Veritas for a long time, but now that I've tried this one, I'm 100% sold. The thing is, like, for mortising chisels and for very small, like, eighth-inch chisels, you have to buy different pairs of jaws, which are another $35.
Oh.
But, you know, if you don't have mortising chisels, I guess it doesn't matter.
Well, and you can use it. It adjusts wide enough. You can use it for your hand planes, too.
Plane irons.
Nice.
Oh, yep. Yeah. Yep.
Oh. How wide can it go? Because, my number seven is, it won't fit in the Veritas.
Well, I would imagine it's 2.5. Ish,
yeah. I can, off the top of my head, I don't remember how.
I mean, listen, Lee Nielsen sells a number seven, and I'm sure that the honing guide fits there. So
yeah, because I think they only have the one honing guide, so I'm sure it fits all their stuff.
I would think.
Yeah,
and then I got their. I got their. It's not their brand, but they sell them the sharpening stones. It's like Hakamui Hokiana.
That sounds right.
Hikadori, I don't remember. It's some Japanese brand, but I like them because you don't have to like soak them in water to get them wet.
Right,
you just spritz them with a little water and you're good to go.
I think, Nick, you know, Nick, do you, what kind of stone? Do you have water stones or oil stones?
I have diamond.
Okay.
What are those things
DMT,
called?
DMT? The DMT plate. Diamond stones?
The DMT diamond plate, yeah. Yeah, they're nice.
Yeah, I don't know how... how real good of a shine you can get with those versus the stones. And one thing I noticed too with my stones is I never really flatten them, and because I have the shaft and ceramic stones, and you have to flatten them. All it takes is sharpening a couple chisels and they dish out in the middle
just enough
where you're not going to get a nice perfectly flat edge across. So
do you,
I bought
just
a flattening
them through your
stone
planer or?
Yeah.
That would be, that
drum
be a
sander
video.
What do you,
I'd
what do you
watch
do?
That could you imagine
it would just turn to
kickback on
oh my god. You know what, the drum sander is not a bad idea. Put like 300 grit on there.
Yeah, if you put some like 300 400 grit on,
hell yeah, it would.
Yeah,
oh my goodness,
oh my gosh, I'm just imagining a planer exploding.
Oh,
I don't know, I think the stone would just break apart. I don't think the
I'm imagining like my lunchbox.
Oh yeah.
Planer, yeah.
34, yeah. Would be destroyed.
It would just be like kaboom.
Yeah. I bet my
I think any downward pressure on those
are
right.
Grizzly or whatever. Just
that would shoot that across the room.
Yeah, it would say
like
give
an
me
RPG.
More.
Yeah. Yummy.
Well, so tell me, how did you actually get your chisel that sharp? What was the routine?
Well, so I mean, like I said, I use the shaft and ceramics, and it's, so we lap the back, and then it's 1,000, 5,000, 12,000, and then to a leather strop. Now, my instructor says like eight, you know, he doesn't really see any difference going higher than eight. I think he goes 1 to 8. I just have a 12, so I go to it to give me that little bit more shine.
I think the highest I have is 10.
Yeah, I think that's the highest I've got.
Now, how are you taking out, like, once you do your secondary bevel, how are you removing that burr that you've created?
Well, my problem is that I don't create a secondary bevel.
Oh, all right. Well, that's why you're, yeah. And if your back's not flat and your primary bevel isn't meeting that at the, you know, oh my gosh. All right.
Yeah.
There's
issues.
I've
got a lot to learn with sharpening.
You can do what I do. Just when your chisels get dull, just buy a new set.
Right.
Yeah. And we've been through this.
I'm on my eighth set of Veritas.
PMV 11s. Yeah.
Do you guys do this too? Because I do this, and somebody thought it was weird, but it makes sense to me. I have two sets of chisels. I have my Veritas that I really take care of and I'm super careful with. And then I have a set of Stanley that I think somebody sent me that I use for like scraping glue and all that jazz.
Yeah, I've got two sets. I've got, they're both Narex, the Czech Republic ones, whatever you want to call them. But one is like the super low end beater ones. And I use those to just hammer on whatever. Actually, I think my 1-inch, the end is so mangled from using like a legit hammer.
Oh gosh.
I don't even remember what I was doing. Mallet? But yeah, I was using a hammer to cut something probably outside in my backyard, I think. I was like, let me grab this chisel real quick. But then I have another nice set of Narex that I actually had a buddy sharpen, and I haven't touched those with anything. Like, I'm afraid to touch those.
You don't want to
dull them.
I don't want, silly. What's the point of having them if you don't use them?
Well, I don't use enough hand tools to really, you know, warrant getting out chisels. Like, everything I do is
I don't use a lot of hand tools either, but chisels are so handy for cleaning little things up. I mean, I use them all the time.
Yeah, that's what I have my other beater chisels for.
And I'm not saying cleaning up glue. I mean, just like, you know, cleaning up if you cut something. I guess I'm talking about cutting something by hand and then cleaning it up a little bit, but I guess that's another hand tool. So,
yeah. Well, I will say I have a shooting board that I use a lot to clean up. So that's not exactly like chisels, but it's hand tools.
Well, but you got to keep that. You got to keep that plain iron sharp for a shooting board.
Yeah, that's true. And that's the one that the same guy that sharpened those chisels sharpened that number 7 that I use to shoot with. And it's been amazing. And I just don't touch it. It's literally when it left his hand, I was like, I'm not touching this. Like, it goes in its sock. It comes out of the sock. I don't adjust it. Nothing. Oh, it's so butter right now.
Another thing to be said.
I'm so afraid to mess it up.
Another thing to be said is, like, if you invest in a really good set of chisels, like the Veritas are the best that I've had, as far as you don't have to sharpen them super often, to be honest. I mean, they hold an edge for a long time.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So,
I mean, it depends how much you're using them with and what you're using them. If you're
for sure. I mean, for how much I use chisels, I sharpen those maybe, I don't know, 3 times a year.
Yeah.
But would you need to sharpen your chisels more if you're using softwood or if you're using hardwood?
Hardwood, because it's the edge retention isn't going to be as good.
I don't know.
And
I don't know if you know this, but hardwood is generally harder, where softwood is softer. So.
Right.
It gets confusing.
But I was just thinking along the lines of like my table saw blade, if I'm running softwood, I have to clean it 3 times more than if I'm running hardwood. Because of the pitch, I was wondering if that had anything to do with edge retention or anything like that.
I've never had a lot of pitch buildup on a chisel tip, but I don't work with a lot of pine. This is really my first and last foray.
I don't think
anybody
with chisels is really going after pine.
Yeah. I mean, I asked my instructor if I can get a riving knife on my dovetail saw. He didn't
think that was funny.
Didn't see the humor in that one. Or some dust collection on this number 4 plane. Right. I'm tired of sweeping at the end of the day.
That's funny.
That's great.
So how much longer this class do you have? How many more?
2 more weeks.
2 more weeks. Wow.
And you're teaching the last 2 weeks, right?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Chop sounds.
I'll be videoing what I can. But yeah, that's the thing. Like, the first video I took, like, I didn't have my microphone with me. So all you get is everyone else in the background. You get the people banging with the hammer to the hold fast. And it sounded like the chain gang in the background.
Well, I thought you were at a bowling alley.
They don't have any issues with you filming that stuff? They're not like, hey, man, people want to see this. They got to pay for it.
No. He doesn't care.
Okay.
I'm giving him just by posting and then mentioning, you know, it's giving them
That's free advertisement.
Free advertisement.
I bet at least 3 or 4 people have thought about it, you know, signing up. So,
no, I would like it. Actually, because he writes a lot of articles for fine woodworking and jigs and things. And I would actually, because some of them
I am
going to build.
Is that a magazine, Jigs and Things?
No, for fine woodworking.
Oh.
It's got a plastic cover.
I thought you were saying that's two different magazines for fine woodworking and for jigs and things. He writes for them.
Jigs and things.
It's called Jigs and Fixtures is actually.
Jigs and more.
But I wanted to see if like I could actually do a YouTube video on, you know, a couple of the jigs. But I don't know if like, because he's, like I said, since some of them are in articles with fine woodworking, they may own the rights. I don't know. I got to talk to him. But, you know, if I split the AdSense revenue or something with them, I don't know.
Yeah.
We'll see. Give me some content.
You mean somebody can own the rights to a jig?
Well, for example, like I wrote an article for Woodpeckers Magazine and like they own that text. They own the script now.
Oh, okay.
Like I can't just take that whole thing and put it in a blog post or an Instructables thing.
Yeah. I gotcha.
They paid for the rights for it or whatever. I think that's how it works.
Yeah.
All right.
Intellectual property.
Yeah. So how's the boat, Jason? I see things are just coming together. You got ribs and skins and
all kinds of terms.
Barbecue.
I don't know.
Yeah.
Dude, today was a fun day. I'm not gonna lie. It actually, like, I've been working on these pieces for 2 weeks now. Today was, 2 weeks today. And it's just kind of monotonous because you're just working on all these little pieces, but you don't really have anything to show for it. But today, finally, everything kind of started coming together. So it's looking like a boat now, which is nice.
It sure is.
But it has been quite the adventure. I mean, obviously, I knew going into this, like, yeah, it's a boat. It's going to take some doing. But I just didn't realize how much math and everything was involved in making a boat. I mean, Tom Sawyer made it seem so easy.
That's because he made a raft.
When he strapped logs together. Right. Yeah, there was a lot of arithmetic involved in that
one. So simple. I mean, the most time I've spent so far is working on the ribs, which, I mean, if you're doing like a cedar strip canoe or something like that, basically you have like a form that you're building to, so you're laying everything out to follow the form. Or with a drift boat, you have ribs, which essentially are just permanent forms that, you know, stay inside the boat. So I had to build all those ribs, but each rib is unique in its angle, both out, and then it's cut on the outside to follow the hull, and it's cut on the bottom to follow the curve of the hull on the bottom, bottom of the boat. I don't know all the boat terms. So
you seem to. You're throwing these words around. Like,
you've been fooling me all week.
I've been reading the plans, so it's been saying all that. And yeah, so just figuring out all those angles. And the way they have you do it, man, I've mentioned before that these plans were definitely written in the 80s, and they're telling you to do things in ways that I just would never do now. Like, they wanted you to make these 16-foot sheets of plywood, quarter inch plywood, so it's 16 feet long, quarter inch, and they want you to freehand run it through the table saw.
Yeah, that's easy to do.
A 16 foot sheet of plywood through the table saw with no fence.
Who has a 16 foot shop? Yeah, when there's like 12 inches ahead of the blade.
Yeah, and then it says on there, like, make sure the plywood's supported at all times as you run it through. Well, I think they're thinking that this is like a group of like five buddies that are like going to build this boat together, where I'm in my shop all by myself. So I was like, well, I'm just going to cut it with a track saw, which that probably wasn't invented in the 80s. So they didn't put that in the plans.
Oh, yeah.
And then at first I thought I was being really smart because the ribs, the way they have you do it is they have you take like a blank piece of whatever hardwood you're using, and you basically make two ribs at the same time. So you cut your bevel on each outside edge that's the angle that'll follow the hull of the boat. And then you draw a diagonal across the board. And so when you cut that diagonal, you separate them and you have your two outside rib pieces. And in the plans, it says to cut that on the table saw, that diagonal, just freehand, just kind of run it through. And I was like, oh, that's dumb. That's sketchy. I'm just going to cut it on my bandsaw. So I cut my first one on the bandsaw, and I thought, I'm so smart. This is way easier. I could follow the line like perfectly. And then I started reading the plans, and I realized, well, the reason they want you to do it on the table saw is because that diagonal cut also has to be cut at an angle on the inside of the boat so your handrail can follow the angle correctly. So I just cut a straight line on the bandsaw. I didn't cut an angle. And then I was like, I could, you know, tilt my table on the bandsaw and cut an angle that way, but then you're having to like hold the board up because it's wanting to slide off as doing it. So I just did what they said and I cut it freehand on the table saw, and you know, it worked, but it was a little sketchy, especially cutting like a 35 degree angle freehand.
How'd you support it?
I just held it and pushed it through. I mean, truly, jeez, like you're just eyeballing it. So the the thing is they have you cut those outside bevels against the fence when it's square. So those outside bevels are perfect, which is the only thing that really matters, because that's what's coming in contact with the hull. So they want that to be like really nice and straight. The inside bevel, it only comes in contact at one point at the very top for the handrail. So it doesn't really need to be as perfect. So you can be a little off on those inside lines, which I was a little off. Apparently, I'm not that great at freehanding stuff on the table saw. What were you going to say?
It is a skill. Wow. Well, because everyone freaks out when they see someone freehanding something on the table saw. You work on any construction site or carpenter all the time. I mean, when you're trying to scribe something and you know you that at a little bit bevel to back cut something. I mean, I still do it. It's just it takes a little getting used to. But once you do, it's just like freehanding on the bandsaw.
Well, I've done it before, and yeah, it's not too bad. But I've never done it at such a severe, having the blade at such a severe angle, it is a little trickier because it wants to pinch under one side if you tweak it a little too much. And I didn't have any kickback or anything, but it was, I don't know, just doesn't make you feel very comfortable.
No, it's a little dicey. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, my other option that I almost did, but I just didn't want to take the time, was I could have cut all those with the track saw. But with them being so small, I would have had to, you know, pair them against some other stock so the track saw could rest on it, and just would have taken them a lot longer. Yeah. So, anyways.
Jeez.
Wow. Well, it's coming along. Yes, Nick?
I was just thinking about a 16-foot kickback.
Oh, yeah. I wonder, it would just kick back the whole way. I mean, I wonder what that would do even. It'd probably just
it's only a quarter-inch plywood. It would just disintegrate.
Big old ripple.
Yeah, it'd flop up on top of the blade and then dance around for a while.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, that'd be scary.
But I will say, I've been like trying to decipher these plans, which in some ways has been a lot of fun. It's like a giant puzzle where you have to make all the pieces before you can put the puzzle together, and the person who wrote the instructions has Alzheimer's. That's what it feels like. But it's kind of been fun because every time I like figure something out, I'm like, yes, like success, I got a piece done. But somebody commented on a post I posted the other day and said something like, oh, it's so nice to see another Northwest boat builder, which is very flattering. I'm not a boat builder. I'm building a boat, but I'm not a boat builder. But I looked at his Instagram page, and he's up in Portland, and this is all he does for a living is make these drift boats, like custom for people. And so I've started talking with him, and he has been awesome to talk to. It's Ray's. Now, let me look this up, or I'm going to say it wrong. But you should go check out his stuff. It is.
So he's coming and building your boat then?
No, Ray's River Dories is the name of his River Instagram Dories page. But yeah, that's all he does is make these wood boats custom for people. And so he's given me a lot of little pointers. Like it said in the plans that I should paint the whole hull before I put everything together. And then all you have to do is like touch up after you're done. And talking to him, he's like, yeah, I mean, you could do that, but you're going to have to paint it all again anyways, so might as well just put it together and wait. Then paint. So that's what I did, which is probably the better decision. And the other thing he said they do is it says in the plans that to use like marine varnish on the whole thing. And he said they'll use marine varnish on the outside of their boats, but they'll use teak oil on the inside so that it's easier to maintain because it's oiled versus varnished. So you can just, you know, re-oil or
refresh
whatever.
It.
Just touch it up.
So. Yeah, he's giving me a lot to think about, which is really cool. And he's helping me get a trailer and oars and all that jazz. So,
wow. Big.
Yeah, what kind of trailer does that go on? Because it's not it's not like a John boat or a pontoon boat, or it's very odd shaped.
Yeah, I mean, they make special trailers for drift boats. They don't make them at his shop, but they're a dealer for a company that makes them. So he's getting me hooked up with one. So that'll be sweet.
Nice.
Yeah, I'm looking at his Instagram page now, and there's a trailer. So for all you listeners out there, there's a trailer. That's what it looks like.
There is. There is a trailer.
So I'm hoping the, I think it'll end up being at least three videos, this whole build, and the first one should drop next Thursday.
Awesome.
So when you're putting that hull and wrapping it around the riblets, that's, I saw just a nail gun on the floor. You're just popping 18 gauge nails in there to hold it?
Or yeah,
is that epoxy or what?
Just in the bow stem and in the transom. And that was a little bit, that wasn't in the plans. That was my own invention because I'm working completely by myself. Mm-hmm. So in the plans, it says you have two or three guys and they help you position the sidewalls onto the bow stem. And then two guys are holding it in place. And then you drill and screw it in place. And you have to apply this marine epoxy adhesive stuff between the layer two. Mm-hmm. But since I'm all by myself, I decided, hey, all the screws are going to be covered up with a trim piece anyways. So yeah, I got it lined up and then, yeah, I just tacked it with a couple staples just to hold it so it wasn't moving around. And then I added all my screws, which worked really well. And I don't think anyone's ever going to know. So
did you consider pocket screws in this application?
You know, I thought about it, but I couldn't. They
quarter
were,
inch.
They were all out of the waterproof plugs, so I decided not to.
The marine varnish plugs.
Yeah, it's so funny, though, because people keep commenting like, oh, man, you're going to be done in no time, but it looks like I'm a long ways, but making it actually look pretty now, that's what's going to take a long time, doing all the trim and finishing work, and then I got to build. Mm-hmm. There's two rows of seats that have to be built. There's like a rowing seat that you have to build, and it's like a braided rope seat that you got to do. And then there's a front, like, you know, fishing seat with adjustable. You can move it forward and backwards to adjust the trim or the ballast in the boat, depending on how many people are in there or how much they weigh. And yeah, so there's still a lot to do. And then the whole finishing process, that's going to be a chore. So
yeah.
I'm on week two. I still think I can get it done in 6 weeks if I push it here. So we'll see.
Are you on track? Like, do they have like...
I have no clue. I don't know.
Okay.
The amount of information that's left out of these plans is crazy. Like, they have all these screws that you have to put in, like the bow stem and the transom and all the side ribs and everything. And it shows on the plans, you know, you put these screws in here. But it doesn't lay out like a screw pattern. It doesn't say how far apart to put the screws, how many screws to put in there. It just shows that it's screwed in. So I'm just guessing a lot on
winging
this.
Winging it.
Just go for broke.
I'm just going for it.
Pepper it. Yeah. I'm sure it doesn't come off.
But no, it's been crazy. It's been a lot of fun. It's fun to do
very
something
cool.
non-furniture-y. Yeah, for a while. It's been... been interesting. And today, man, when I got those sidewalls and the ribs in, and it was like, ah, oh, man, this looks like a boat. It was just so exciting.
Yeah.
I was
land ho.
Yeah.
Land ho.
The sidewalls didn't snap in half when I bent them, which, you know, probably doesn't happen, but in your mind you're like, is it gonna break? I don't know. So I'm gonna
What have you been go ahead. No, finish.
No, I was just going to say I got half the ribs in to this afternoon. I'm going to go out after we're done recording and put the other ribs in.
But it's 16 feet long total? Is that what it was? Or 13?
Yeah, yep. 16.
16.
Yeah, yeah. How many McRibs does it have?
It's got 9 ribs plus the transom and the bow stem. So it's got 11 points of contact across the whole thing. Yeah.
That's a lot.
It's a lot.
I guess. I don't know. I have nothing to compare it to, but
right.
It sounds like a lot.
Too. I have no clue. I don't know. People keep asking me questions, like boat questions in my posts, and I don't know. I couldn't
tell
you.
Tell them to DM Trent.
Yeah.
For real.
So what have you been working on, Nick?
Before I get started, we forgot to thank our patrons.
Oh, boy.
At the top of the show. So why don't we do that?
Okay.
First,
we have got Jason. A lot of new patrons tonight.
Yeah, we do.
We got a lot of, let's see, let's go through, we got one top tier, but we'll save them for last. We got, these are our new patrons in no order of importance. We got good old Jerry at GA Woodshop. Is that for Georgia, you think?
I would assume Jerry? That's Georgia.
Thanks, Jerry.
Jerry. So we got Jerry, welcome aboard. I can say that because I'm building the boat.
Oh, God.
You're a term. We got Kevin McMahon. Is that right?
I think it's McMahon.
McMahon?
McMahon?
Yeah, oh. Like Ed McMahon.
Oh, okay. That makes sense. Kevin McMahon. And we've got Andrew Hammond, Dustin Yonker, and Todd Madison. Madsen.
Yeah.
All right. Cool. So we got a lot of people with weird names tonight. It's great. Welcome. Welcome to all you guys. We appreciate your patronage. And then we got a new top tier patron, and that is Kyle Nance at Four Nancy's Design Co.
I first read that, I thought it said furnaces design. I was like, wow, people actually design furnaces. But yeah.
Yeah, it's a hot business.
Four underscore.
Oh my God.
Nance's Design Co.
Right. At Four Nance's Design Co. Thanks, Kyle.
Yeah. Yeah. Thank you, buddy. And then we've got some returning top tier patrons, but we'll save those for a little bit later on.
Yeah. We'll save them.
And as always, if you would like to join our Patreon, it is patreon.com/shopsoundspodcast.
Whoa.
See, I'm getting good. I got this.
Well,
it only took
practicing.
Me 13 episodes, but I got it.
I was on the edge of my seat and you nailed it.
Yeah. I'm guessing every time though, to be honest. I just All right.
Nick, did you cut yourself shaving on the top of your head? Because I thought there was a fly on my screen, but I think it's a big scab on the top of your head.
What is that? Are you Trump?
So I got a new sweatshirt. Somebody sent me a new Carhartt hoodie. It's got my logo on it. It's nice.
Mm.
But I haven't washed it yet, and I put it on, and like I cut my hair yesterday. So it's like Jason knows, like, Us people with no hair that shave our heads, like it's that like prickly stick, like I don't know what to like. It's like that Velcro right now where it's
You could stick a sanding disc to your head right now.
Yes, my head is a hook and loop right now.
You should try that sometime. Just rub your head on it. It
wouldn't be too bad. Yeah. Buff it out.
Like, you look like Mike Pence over there with that thing stuck on your head.
Where is it?
It's gone.
It came off.
Yeah,
but I literally trying to brush my screen. I was like making sure it was you before I said anything.
No,
it embarrassed you. But
yeah, it was a big fly stuck to my head.
Oh my God.
No, but this I need to wash this hoodie because when I put it on, even my wife, I had some stuff stuck to my forehead. She's like, "What is on your face?" And it's that fuzz from new clothes. That need to get washed. Like a new towel, you know, where they shed.
Right.
Yeah. But I hear
that's what it was.
But who sent you that? Was it Nick at Stated Woods Co?
No, it wasn't.
Oh, okay. You don't have to.
Very subtle though. That was nice.
Trying to guess.
Yeah, thanks, Nick.
So what are you working on? It's gotta be black and it's gotta be birch ply.
Ironically, it is black, but it's not birch ply. I put out a new video. I guess you haven't watched it because, I mean, no one's really watched it.
He's busy.
It's pretty low numbers. But I made a modern coat rack.
Ooh.
Out of some red oak that I had that I dyed black, obviously, because nobody wants red oak in their house.
Nobody.
No, that is approved.
Right. So I dyed it black. So I've been using Angelus leather dye versus the India ink, which everybody thinks, like everyone on Instagram thinks that I'm like the India ink king for some reason.
Well, you were for a long time, let's be honest.
Yeah.
Yeah. I have been known to use it on occasion.
I read on the news the other day that there's actually a huge ink shortage in India because of you.
Is it because of me?
Yep.
Well, I take full responsibility.
Things are looking a little faded over there.
And all the tie-dye shirts.
Yeah. Everybody's printers are running low.
Yeah.
It's like that episode of The Office where, why is the printer out of ink and Creed's got that stuff in his hair?
That's a great one. Yeah.
So leather dye, I didn't know that that's a thing for wood. Is that a common thing?
Well, apparently, do you remember when I made that bass guitar earlier this summer?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Nick, well, I didn't actually make the bass, but I finished it for the luthier. I stumbled across a bunch of people that were making basses and guitars and whatnot with leather dye. So I dove in with that and found this Angelus brand, and it's by far better than India ink. It like penetrates better. It's a deeper color. It goes on easier. It dries. Well, I mean, it probably dries about the same as India ink, but super fast. Like it's dry to the touch in 5 minutes. I mean, and then I waited probably 30 minutes to an hour before I put lacquer on it. But I mean, because you use lacquer on top of it, that's dry in like 30 minutes. So your project could literally be, you know, raw wood, dye it black, coat of lacquer in an hour and a half. Like,
that's what you should do with your non-project piece, Keith. It's all different wood. Just dye the whole thing black. You'll never even know.
That's what I said last episode. Just dye it black.
Yeah, I was thinking of using some kind of trans tin dyes and making it all walnutty. Seeing if I could check my color matching skills with trans tin dyes.
You could probably do it. You just got to know your color science.
I had an idea. Yeah, my color wheel. What's your guys' opinion on this? Because I don't know if it'll work, but I think it would be kind of, it wouldn't be cool, but I think it'd be funny, is to do an epoxy table, okay?
So you
you build a whole form to make a big rectangle tabletop, and you pour crystal clear epoxy. But in the form, you set a dinner table with plates, napkins, knives, spoons, and then on the plates you put mashed potatoes, peas, steak, you know, all the food. And do you think if you poured epoxy, what would happen?
Like on top of food, like actual food?
Yeah, if you encased it in epoxy.
You mean would it float?
Would it float? I mean, you could glue it down, but would it would it preserve it?
Yeah.
Oh yeah, I would think.
Or would it start to like...
If no air can get to it, yeah.
You think so? You don't think it'd start to like rot and create gas and your whole table would explode?
Well, actually, do you think... Would it like break down on its own?
I don't know. That's what I want to know. Because how cool would it be if you could sit down at a table and eat your dinner on top of dinner?
Double-decker dinner.
I mean, like, yeah, it'd be cool. People are putting all this weird crap in river tables. I think it'd be awesome to put like steak and potatoes and...
Put food...
Peas and carrots.
Well, have you ever been to like a steakhouse where they come around and show you what the entrees are, but they're like wrapped in plastic so you can get a preview of what you're going to... Yeah,
yeah.
That's basically what it is. Like, here's what you're going to be eating tonight.
But those are like hours old.
Yeah, oh yeah.
What Jason's talking about could be like months and years.
Yeah. I'm just really curious what would happen if you tried to encase real food in epoxy.
If it worked, I would do a McDonald's table... A Burger King table.
Yeah, you can do whatever you want.
Like a Buffalo Wild Wings table.
And then if there ever is like a zombie apocalypse, you could always break into that thing and you'd have food.
Right, you could just break, yeah. Well, how do you break into epoxy?
I don't know. Well, ask John Lucky, all right? He's really broken into that world.
Oh, bro.
sorry.
Oh, that's terrible.
I don't know. These are good questions.
Yeah. The things we wonder about.
Yeah.
Oh.
So sorry to side rail you. Back to your coat rack.
My coat rack. I was going to say, I have...
Modern coat rack.
Yeah, my modern coat rack. it was just one piece of red oak. So it was just a scrap piece that I had. Actually, it was a pretty nice piece. I've been, it was
that's
like,
no such thing that's as not a even nice possible. Piece of red oak.
Well, it was 16 inches wide.
You're saying like, it was a stomach flu, but it was a nice stomach flu.
Oh, such a sweet nice. Kid. Yeah. Oh, so naive.
Okay. It was clear. How about that? It was a clear piece of red oak and it was 16 inches wide. So it was a really wide board that I was hanging onto. I guess it was from an older table that I did that back when I first started working with hardwood, I thought the easiest thing to do would be to buy wide boards so that I wouldn't have as much to glue up for tabletops.
Oh, how wrong you were.
Brilliant.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, well, logically, that makes perfect sense, though, because I only need 3 18-inch boards to make up a tabletop.
To make up a canoe, which right. you'll end up with.
Yeah, exactly. It ends up being a potato chip. But anyways, I had that board and I cut it down and I made the hooks out of, so I cut a 3-inch slice, a 1.5-inch slice, 3-inch, 1.5-inch, so on to where you would have the 1.5-inch be where you're going to hang your hook. And I put a dowel rod through all of them to where it would pivot. And would just flip out.
Yeah.
And I cut 45s on the backside of all those 1.5 so that it would, one, you could grab it easy from the top and pull it down your coat rack hook. And then I thought when I first cut it out that 45 would be enough of an angle on the bottom so that when you pull it down, it would stop on the wall, except it didn't even come close to working. After I cut them all. So I had cut the tops and the bottoms at 45. And then I was stuck because it didn't work. I was like, how am I supposed to cut this even steeper
now? You should have called Jeff Douglas. Fourth Armor Woodworking.
Jeff. Jeff would have known.
Yeah, he would have helped you out.
But mm-hmm. I was really stuck because I was like, do I use a miter saw, make a jig? But these were only, I think I cut the final pieces to 10 inches tall. So that's a pretty small piece to put under the miter saw.
So what'd you do? I'm on the edge of my seat.
Well,
Keith is gripped with the story. He keeps changing the background on his computer.
Yeah. He's like, he's thumbing through his gallery of where he is.
I was looking
at stories.
No, I'm not. Oh, that's not why I was trying to. Jerry kept walking by the screen here, distracting me.
So how'd you?
I want to know how this piece of red oak was given a dress and lipstick, because sometimes it's pretty hard to save a piece of red oak.
Well, it was worth saving, KJ.
Okay.
Maybe not.
Maybe not.
But I did. I walked back, I literally, because I was filming this, and I would walked back and forth from the table saw to my miter saw, like thinking, how can I make this cut to where I can, because I needed a really steep cut on the back so that it would fold out properly and sit on the wall.
Right.
And I was like, I don't see of any smart way to do this without, you know, causing bodily
potential
harm
danger
or, yeah right, or just totally screwing up. So actually, this would be a good question for both you. How would you guys have made that cut? So you've already got a 45 degree on the end, and this is, you're on edge now, so your piece has got to go steeper. I can't remember what I actually ended up cutting it at, but it was like,
and it's all cut up into pieces at this point or not yet?
Yes, it is all cut up into pieces now.
And so you have to go steeper.
Yeah, so I've got an inch thick piece of red oak that is about 10 inches tall by 1.5 inches wide with a 45 degree to the ends mm-hmm. on the back.
Uh-huh. And it's got to go steeper.
How would you make the
45?
Bottom steeper than, yeah. So I went about
well, how much
60
steeper?
To about 75 degrees.
How wide is any one piece?
1.5 inches wide.
1.5.
That's it?
Yeah.
Why did you just do it on their chop saw?
Well, I can't go that steep on my chop saw.
Sure you can. You just make a little wedge.
Yeah.
Put
exactly.
it against the
you
wedge.
Make a wedge, like a 30-degree wedge, to, and then your board will be out 30, starting at 30 instead of 0 or 90. And uh-huh. then you add another 45, and that gives you 75.
So, well, how are you orienting the piece you're cutting?
On edge. You're going to have to do it on edge.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's only an inch and a half wide, though. It's not bad on a chop saw.
Yeah. So yeah. So it's an inch, it's going to go through an inch and a half of material straight up and down, right? You're saying it's an inch.
Right.
I'm looking at your picture here. Yeah. They're inch and a half wide, 10 inches long. Yeah. So you stand it on edge. So end grain down.
Right.
But with the face of it against a 30-degree wedge that you cut. Now, it's tough to kind of hold that. You may want to use double-sided tape or something or...
Yeah, see, that's what I was thinking, because it's only so far that how am I going to hold it to the saw?
Well, what I would do is instead of doing like a traditional wedge, I would take a piece of plywood and then I would just put a, you know, false fence hooked onto the piece of plywood at whatever angle you want. And then you have a fence that you can actually pinch your fingers around the fence and your stock piece and hold it in place and then make your cut.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So you're basically making like a tiny little sled for your chop saw that you can hold it against. And then you can cut whatever angle you want. My chop saw goes up to 60, which is really nice. But my old chop saw or my job site chop saw, that I've had to do that a few times where you got to get a steeper curve.
Yeah.
Not curve angle.
Yeah.
How did you do it? Because I feel like this is all being built up. You're going to tell some magical way that you did it. And it was like,
freehand on the table saw.
Yeah, I freehanded on the table.
I balled it on the disc edge. Sander.
On edge, yeah. No, I got out the oscillating spindle sander and just went to town on them. Just sanded them down. So I marked them all with, you know, pencil at the angle I needed and then just sanded to the line.
Yeah.
And what it had to be some
perfect
people do,
it was the backside.
Actually, I saw this when I was researching to build the boat, when I was originally going to scarf my plywood together, because you have to do a really elongated bevel on the two sides of the plywood to scarf them together.
Uh-huh.
And this one guy, he just took a piece of stock, like steel, and he strapped it across the entire plywood. And then using a belt sander, he basically rested it or brought it right to the edge of that steel and then matched it with the bottom of the plywood. So he got that perfect bevel all the way across with the belt sander. So yeah, you could do that.
I guess, yeah, that's one way. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's kind of what I did. I mean, the oscillating spindle sander is just a big belt sander.
Yeah.
That goes around in circles.
No one uses belt sanders anymore, do they?
Yeah, I've got.
I would if I had one. I would.
I got that big Rotex. That thing eats through stuff so quick. I mean,
no, but like a horizontal belt sander to flush up an edge or something.
Yeah, actually, I wish I had a belt sander right now for the bottom of this boat because I got to flush up that whole edge before I put the bottom on. Be a lot of planing.
Oh boy. But yeah, I finished that up.
That's what I was going to do.
What, you're going to hand plane the bottom of the boat?
Yeah.
You just sharpen. Yeah, he's going
to
sharpen
the edge. Well, I mean, I basically just have to bring down the quarter inch plywood because it's curved on the bottom, and you bring the ribs so that they're square with the lower edge of that quarter inch. So you have like the quarter inch sticking up above the ribs, and you got to bring that down flat all the way around so it's level with the ribs on the bottom.
Okay.
But I was just going to use like a block plane to eat through that quarter inch, no time at all. So.
Right.
Right.
Well, I did finish.
This is the most roundabout story of a coat rack in
I know, and it's just a coat rack. It's just a coat rack. It's not even like, it's that great. But
you know, I've seen these before, and I was actually curious how they were done. I didn't know you ran a dowel. There's one dowel that runs all the way through those pieces.
Well, that was different because everyone that I saw, they ran it all the way through, but I didn't like the dowel sticking out on the ends.
The ends, yeah.
So what I did was actually just and because I didn't have a dowel that was long enough to make it the whole run.
Or a drill bit. You didn't have a 48-inch drill bit.
Not everyone has a really long dowel. You just got to work with what you got.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, I know. And I didn't have a long enough dowel.
Yeah.
So I cut the dowel up and only had it in sections.
Oh, okay. I see.
On the part. So where that the coat rack would actually flip down, that only had the dowel. Mm-hmm. So it didn't run all the way through. But
how was it like sturdy enough all the way across? Did you have like a connecting piece that like ran? Like if there's just dowel connecting like piece to piece, how was it not like flopping all over the place?
Well, because it's flat against the wall.
Oh.
It like, I guess it acts as its own stop. So it's not floppy at all. It's super solid.
Mm.
It works great. But
speaking of super solid, Alex Johnson. He is a super solid.
Solid Johnson. Yeah.
Solid one. Yeah. Johnson's works. So there's that.
Oh my.
Looks good, Nick, though. I appreciate the grain. I can see that red oak cathedral grain there.
Yeah.
Bummer. Gotta love
it. You don't like that?
No.
No.
Who likes that?
I don't like the cathedral grain at all. That's why.
Well, see, I like it. It's funny.
A lot of people do.
Yeah, I picked it out of that board because I thought it looked the coolest.
If you're going to use red oak, at least use Riffson red oak.
Yeah.
Well, I didn't have any.
Well, you had probably, there's probably the 1 inch on each edge of that was Riffson.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I guess so. I could have just used that.
You could have made a 1 inch.
We forgot to congratulate Nick at the beginning of this episode for hitting 2,500 on YouTube.
Oh, thanks, guys.
Yeah. I saw your post on Instagram. Well done, man.
Yeah.
Thanks.
There you go.
I appreciate it. I've got another one in the works.
Subscribe.
Did you say you're going to go subscribe?
Yeah, go subscribe.
No, I'm telling everyone else to. I already said.
No. KJ's like, oh, I'm going to go subscribe.
I'm going to go subscribe. I was waiting. Keith won't subscribe to anybody below 2,500. So now that you've hit that mark.
Ooh, yeah.
Right.
That's milestone. His threshold.
He'll do it.
It's amazing that they even give like milestones on the hundreds. Like,
where do
not
you
just
see those?
Thousands.
I see people post those ribbon things all the time. Where do you even see that?
TubeBuddy. If you get the app for TubeBuddy.
Yeah.
They're in there. Yeah.
Yeah.
Gives you
a little pat on the back.
Feedback. It tells you how many views you have.
Wow, I got to check that out. Wow. Crazy.
That's a good app.
It's just another thing to check and boost your ego.
Speaking of YouTube, so I'm building this boat, which is fun, but I just can't get a video done in my normal like week span. And I took last week off and I didn't post a video. And I just couldn't bring myself to not post a video this week. So in the midst of stuff drying, in 2 hours, I filmed and edited a YouTube video and posted it.
That already has 100,000 views.
Right.
Oh, I mean, I don't understand why. But it's always the ones that I throw together and don't care about at all that seem to do well. So maybe that should be my plan of action.
Well, that's definitely my plan of action from here on out.
Yeah, I like that style video though. It was the tips and tricks one because I'm talking on camera the whole time and I don't add music to it. It takes no time to edit it at all. I don't have to do voiceover. I don't have to do music. Yeah. It's just like it's so quick. Almost makes me wonder if I should do all my videos that way.
Some people really like that.
Yeah.
That my next video actually has. I've got on camera talking, on camera looking at my computer, talking to the camera while I'm screen recording my computer because it's going to be a how to edit in Adobe Premiere Pro.
Ooh.
Nobody edits in that. Give me something from Final Cut.
I'm talking to two guys that use their phone.
Yeah, you sent us that like video thing and you explained all your camera and lighting and I didn't understand a word you were saying.
Nothing.
Right over my head.
What's crazy is there's people that understand that and they're on YouTube.
Mm.
It's just not you two guys.
Hey, it's a big day or big week for me this week because, you know, I edit everything on my phone or my iPad and I have this microphone that I plug in there, but it plugs into the little jack on the bottom of the iPad. So when I plug that in, I can't have headphones. So when I want to like listen to stuff, I'm constantly like unplugging my microphone, listening, plugging it back in, you know, going back and forth.
Well, I did you get a splitter?
I got a pair of Bluetooth headphones now. Oh. So now I'm moving up in the world. This is new technology for me. There's no cord.
How does it
work?
That's
the wireless.
You just put them on your head and you can hear.
Magic.
It's amazing. It is magic.
What is this madness?
I know. It's crazy. So
Jason, I tried because we were waiting at the vet the other day and I was like, you know what? I had this footage from this weekend from class. Let me see if I can just edit it in shot real quick. I lasted 38 seconds and almost threw my phone. I was like, I don't know how, it's just impossible. It's like split this, cut this, but oh my God, it'll never happen. But unless you
I've
give
been
me
doing
a,
it
do
it,
you
so
know what, do a
long
YouTube
that
video.
It's just second nature.
Do a YouTube be, video yeah, on it on how to edit in that and maybe I'll watch
so,
it.
It's so quick though.
I don't understand how you guys can use what you guys use to edit.
I use the Final Cut Pro.
Well,
oh, you
we
are,
don't understand.
You're on Final Cut Pro now.
We don't understand how.
Yeah,
you
I was
use
on
Red
iMovie
Oak, so.
Before.
Okay. Well, you've made a great leap then.
Yes. I mean, everything still looks the same, but I have a few more options.
No, yeah. There's a lot more options. You can actually color grade.
Yeah, color grade, sharpen. I like that, and add. I like even... the volume
you don't
control
need to mess around with all that stuff. You know, I read an interesting article the other day. It was actually on YouTube. You know how they suggest like helpful things on your little dashboard thing?
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Anyways, they suggested that having videos that are too nice, too well manicured, I don't remember the words they said, can sometimes actually hurt your channel.
Oh, then that's what's that's because
you're not relatable?
Me.
Yeah, you don't come across as relatable like or attainable to other people. It just seems too commercial and professional and.
Well, then what do you know? MKBHD?
No, does that something
I didn't
you search
think so.
For on Craigslist?
No.
Grindr.
He's a
I don't know
on Grindr. No, he's a huge tech guy on YouTube that has his name's Marcus Brownlee. He's got like millions of subs. And he shoots.
Well, I'm not saying you can't be successful, but I'm just saying they
no.
They offered that as something to think about. If you, I don't know,
huh? Like if you come across too polished,
yeah,
yeah.
And I was like, phew, I don't got to worry about that.
With your running in frame, out of breath.
Yeah.
Right. Well, but you have the advantage, Jason, too. Whatever the hell lighting and just the way your shop is, you don't have to color grade everything. It always looks good, and it always looks the same. It's very extremely consistent. Mine
yeah.
is not.
Dumb luck, I guess. I don't know.
It is.
Yes. Yep.
Yep. Like 99 out of 100 people would try to shoot with their iPhone in their shops. It wouldn't come anywhere close to what yours looks like.
Right. I think I'm going to get the new iPhone 12.
It looks crazy.
The only reason I want it is because my phone's telling me I'm out of storage on my phone, and I don't want to. I don't want to take the time to go through and like clean it off. So I'm just gonna get a new
just
phone
like
with
a new
more storage.
Just like your chisels.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Get a I new am one. So lazy when it comes to that stuff. So my truck needs the oil changed. I'm literally next week. I'm just
truck.
Gonna go get.
Just
a
gonna
new
buy
one.
A new truck.
Yeah. I ran out. I bought a new truck. I forget how many years ago it was, but the dealership I bought it from gives you like X amount of free oil changes when you get the truck. Well, I ran out like a couple months ago, so now
it's time
to buy a new truck because now I'll get free oil changes again. It makes sense, right?
Yeah, drain all the oil, then you don't need to change it. Where'd I go?
Oh, your screen's dark on my side.
Uh oh. I don't know.
It's okay. I didn't like looking at you anyways. Now, I can just see that tiny black and white photo of you that looks like you're an Apple executive.
Oh, yeah. Look at that. Like I'm at a startup, internet startup company.
Yeah.
Yeah. In somebody's garage.
CEO. Yeah.
But
oh, it's got a white background.
On that note, Have we talked about enough?
Yeah.
Good stuff in this episode, you think?
Yeah.
Have we given the people their money's worth?
We're at almost 70 minutes of blather.
Blather. And like 45 of that was interrupting Nick trying to tell us about his coat rack.
Right. Right. 70 minutes of palaver.
Yeah. All right. Well, I think next episode, so 2 weeks, we're going to try and get another guest on here just to break up the monotony a little bit. So we'll nail someone down for that. So stay tuned for our mystery person. We won't tell you until the episode. Well, that's not true. We'll tell you when we post about the episode. But
right.
We're not going to tell you now because we haven't actually asked anyone.
Nail it down. Yeah.
But we got 2 weeks to do
ink,
it.
No, not down. Ink. Ink isn't on paper yet.
No.
We no.
We're still waiting on that shipment from India.
Negotiation.
Yeah. All right.
Yep.
Well, with that being said, we're going to head into the after show. And if you're not a patron, well, then just go leave now. We don't really care about you. But if you are a patron, you can come listen to the after show. I'm just joking. We do care about you if you're not a patron. But we care about you more if you signed up on Patreon. So.
And where can they find us on Patreon?
At patreon.com/shopsoundspodcast.
Whoa. That was too polished.
It's not even surprising more. I got
that
it
was too
my,
polished. It wasn't
got
relatable.
It in my brain.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, all right.
There you go.
Let's head over to the after show.
Okay.
All right.
See ya.
Good night, everybody. Love you.